The good old Christian ethic, Hebraic Christian ethic, tells you to do, and you'll be godly. And if you don't, damn you, I'll whip you in. Oh, Brother Johnny Falderall. Defecating on Christianity every Sunday. Just want you to know that I'm still alive. I got a tip for you when you come here. A real tip. You want to learn something? I got a runny nose. I just want you to know, I don't do this as a habit. If you come and you can't stay, listen close and pick the time you leave. Otherwise, you get categorized. When I make a comment like that about the Christian preaching on Sunday that's dumping on us, and you walk out, and you got an innocent reason for going, weak kidneys, it makes it look like you're on the side of the defecators. Listen and pick the right time to go. Like when I've already said something good and have turned to write on the board. Or when I said I was going to smoke the Pope, that's a good time to leave. There's another message on basic Christianity. I didn't intend to preach it. I think this is the hardest message for me to preach because I have such respect for my audience, I think you could preach it better than me. I've preached it so many times, you ought to have memorized. And it's real hard to go back to kindergarten. But based on results, some of us skipped the grade. God was proving two things in the Old Testament. His integrity. He said, for sin comes death. Satan came along and lied. He said, you won't die. Furthermore, God's keeping something from you. You eat the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. You learn those rules, those do's and don'ts. You'll be like God. All you have to do to be like God is come to know. Eat the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. God wants to keep you dumb in that respect. Because He can't stand competition. You learn it. You'll be like God. Now you tell me if I'm not accurate. Most of the messages preached today from pulpits across this land are giving you some fruit off of the knowledge tree of good and evil. Their business is to tell you this is good and that's bad. That's all that goes on every Sunday. God hates the bad, and here it is. Sell your back and form. Be good like me. Sweat and strut and say I'm holy. Attack, 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 as the psychologists have figured out long years ago. Attack the sin you secretly love the most. You can always tell when a preacher is fooling around on his wife. He preaches against sex. I mean, he gets hung up on adultery behind the scenes and from the pulpit. That's his only subject. Known as reverse reactions. Tell him, am I right? Every Sunday, fruit from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. God said, you eat it, you'll die.
Satan said, maybe if I go slow today, I won't ever have to preach this message again. Satan said, you eat it, you won't die. You'll become like God. The Old Testament is God's proof of his integrity. They've been dying ever since. Go across the street. They've been dying ever since. They were shut off from the source of life. And they've been dying. But more important, God came down on a mountain and talked, literally dictated to Moses, and told him all that was necessary to bring the themis into history. I use another word, decay. It's always in words of righteousness, justification. When God's nature breaks onto the stage of history, they'd change the word. And as I started some time back, the Jews did that. God meant to break on history as Jehovah and show them what he was. Jehovah Rohi, I'm your shepherd. Jehovah Rophi, I'm your healer. Jehovah Shammah, I'm your peace. Jehovah Sidkenu, I'm your righteousness. Jehovah revealing himself what he wanted to be, but he had been walled away by the sins of the people. God on the stage of history, the ancient Greeks would use a different word. They said when the unknowable and the untouchable finally breaks through, then that is God's righteousness found on the stage of history. God's righteousness came out in the law. When God revealed the law, the knowledge of good and evil was a knowledge of God's standard. It literally, if it could be kept, any person exhibiting 100% all of the time throughout his life, the perfection of the law, you encountered godliness on the stage of history. But it never attained that. All that was revealed in history was the unattainable standard. And the conclusion of the greatest student of the law of them all, the Pharisee of the Pharisees, taught at the feet of Gamaliel, Paul, is all the law did was bring awareness of sin, and he uses the Greek word hamartia, to fall short. Doesn't matter whether it's way down here or just a bare, small amount. The law demands perpetuosity from the womb to the grave, not one deviation. The law demands perfection from the womb to the grave, not a single iota, jot, or tittle missed. The definition of the law is perfection. There can be no deviation. One miss is as good as a mile, and all have sinned, hamartia, and come short of the glory of God, and there is no question, the law was the shining forth of God's glory. This is the standard of his holiness. It's not bad. Just unattainable. That's all. The reason the law was given was to prove Satan a liar. You can know the law perfectly as defined by God on the hill called Sinai. And nobody in history has ever matched it. Now, the claim of the church is, yes, one did match it. And that's my claim. And in the law, God wrote the law of the perfect servant, as I said two Sundays ago. The perfect servant, if he perfectly fulfilled his obligation, could go out free in the seventh year. If he didn't, he couldn't go. But if he obtained a wife and a children, or wife and child, while he was in servitude, to take them with him, or to be with them, he must go to the door forfeit his own earned position of departure and nail his ear, the symbol of obedience, to the door. That's part of the law. The law of the perfect servant. Jesus came. He prayed not for the world, but for those, he said to God, whom you've given me out of the world. Not just for them, but all who hear through the preaching they give. The offspring from the seed of the word. The church. The bride of Christ anew. He wanted his wife and his children. And he prayed in what is the true Lord's Prayer. The high priestly prayer. Father, I've finished the work you've given me to do. Complete and total perfection in self-consciousness. No awareness of any lacking. I've done what you sent me to do. I've delivered the word and they've received it. Restore me to the glory. But he wanted the family. The redeemed ones. He could have gone home without the cross. And that's what I preached on. The kinsman redeemer. Every sacrifice through the Old Testament, even before the law was written, Moses went up the hill as the type of the mediator with certain leaders and 70 elders. They weren't allowed to worship. Worship afar off. Only Moses as the type of the mediator could talk to God. God said, go back down the hill. He killed the sacrifice. He wrote the first writing that is recorded in Scripture. And he read to the people what God had told him as the preliminary draft of the law. They said all the things that the Lord has said we will do. But they still couldn't come nigh the Lord. Exodus 24. Mount of Transfiguration in the Old Testament, if you will. Moses slew the sacrifice. And here they stand, the leaders of the people, the best performers. And it's a gory spectacle in ancient Jewish worship or ancient Hebrew worship. He takes the blood of the sacrifice and splat, throws it on the people. Well, I'm perfect, splat. And when the blood containing the life of the dead substitute vicarious sacrifice of that animal that is given to atone for sins, when that blood is sprinkled on them, then and only then, God says, bring them up, I'll talk to them now. And they commune and have a feast with God on the mountain. The Old Testament is to prove you die, so the devil lied. You can't make it. I make you the custodian, the oracle of my law. I choose you out of all the people of the world to know it better than anybody. None have attained, but in love I give you sacrifice, temporary, vicarious, substitute sacrifice. You're able to keep living every year because on the Day of Atonement, you bring two goats and you cast lots over them. I choose one, the other's a scapegoat, and the high priest performs an act that because I said it, I'll do it. Put his hands on the head of the animal. All the sins of the people for the past year go on that goat, and that goat is taken to a wilderness area where nobody can ever see it. Nobody lives there. And all the sins of the people, even the secret sins, are gone. The second one is slain. The bullock is slain. The goat and the lamb. And the blood is taken by the high priest. And he sprinkles it 7 times in the Holy of Holies inside the tabernacle. He got bells on the bottom of his robes. If the blood of the sacrifice, if the sacrifice is not deemed by God, which in the Old Testament is described as a bright light, a Shekinah glory that comes and descends inside that Holy of Holies, and there at the mercy seat, the priest stands with a sprinkled blood. If the sacrifice is not acceptable to God, the priest drops dead. And they don't hear the bells anymore. And they're terrorized. Now they've got all the past taken care of. Well, what about between now and the end of next year when next Day of Atonement comes? They kill a heifer. They mix blood of the slain heifer with the ashes And in addition to all the other sacrifices, as you sin through the year to come, the application of the blood and ashes mixed, sprinkled, will cover the individual sins. The sin offering, the trespass offering, the burnt offering, the meat offering, the peace offering, daily available, keeps you okay day by day until the next day of atonement. Then it's all wiped out again. All of that is teaching a lesson. Paul says these are shadows of things to come, of an adequate sacrifice one day. And as Paul argues, we all suffer because God judged us all because of one man. One man's sin separated me from the source of life. The God who stuck to His word in saying, for one man's sin, all will be separated, for one man's righteousness will give the gift of salvation. And the one perfect servant perfectly fulfilled the law. The themis incarnate, the substance of God moved into a tent of human flesh perfectly. That's the claim of the church. The only one who ever did it perfectly fulfilled the law. And having the perfect life to offer, gave His life. If you want it in ancient theology, God treated His Son as you and I deserve to be treated. He took the one that had never been separate from the light of His presence and moved him into the darkness our sins obtained for us, that He might treat us as His Son deserves to be treated and move us into the light of His presence eternal. He's not taken a made-over man. Having obtained, once Christ died for the sins of the world, God can give salvation to everybody. He'll give it to Hitler if He wants. My sins yesterday, today, and tomorrow are covered. All that the tree of knowledge says is bad, existentially performed in the life of every person from history's beginning to end, was dumped on Him. God can give it away. The New Testament message is, He wants favors. I tell a father, if you want to learn about God, look in your own heart. What do you want from your kid? Perfect performance or trust? What do you want from your lover, your wife? Perfect performance or husband? Perfect performance or trust? Trust begets trust. God has made a decision in eternity. The first man ceased to trust Him and listened to the Father of lies. God is going to give salvation to trusters. He wants to fill the void in eternity left by Satan and his angels when a third of heaven was cast out and became the evil spirits. He wants to fill it with those who trust Him. He will put us on display before the denizens of eternity. Job in the Old Testament personifies it. Though He slay me, yet will I trust Him. God is giving the gift of salvation to faithers. He likes them. He likes people who trust Him. That's the lost message of the church. I don't care what your lifestyle is. None of my business. I don't care how many sins you got. Don't confess them to me. I'm not interested, nor can I help you. It doesn't matter. They're covered. God promises salvation to faithers, not perfecters. Faithers, they get it. Well then, what about behavior? He does it. So Terry Owens, salvation is more than a judicial act. It's an implantation act. He puts His life in us. He gives the gift of new life. That's why without the resurrection our faith is vain. I could not become a Christian because I wrestled for 3 years in agnosticism. I simply could not believe the resurrection. But if I could believe that Jesus came out of that tomb, pierced that rock,
pierced a locked door, and sailed off in the blue. I can believe the rest of it. It's very easy, once that hurdle is crossed, to believe the same Spirit that raised up Christ from the dead shall so likewise dwell in you as a gift.
You don't clean the house up for the king. The king moves in to the life of favors. A literal, substantial placement of God's life inside those that trust him. God'd rather have a Jew that trusts him than a hypocritical Christian trying to redo what the Jew failed to do. Keep the law. Nobody can keep it. But as we trust him, he'll put his life in us.
And look out, brother. I still think one of the best illustrations of the Christian called Gene Scott is the reluctant astronaut. What's his name?
Don Knotts.
I mean, I just wanted to explore the perimeters of that rocket ship. When I got in, I really didn't want to fly. I like the good old terra firma. I don't want to go. You get in that rocket ship and it fire, you are going to fly. Get that? Now look out, my friend. If you ever catch what real godliness attained is, that God is going to give it to favors, then the analogy breaks down because you become the rocket ship. But the engine is implanted. If you start faithing and trusting God, something's going to happen. Life comes in. And you're going to change. I ain't going to change you. I mean, I didn't like the direction. I mean, I'd much rather paint a little picture up here of my standard of righteousness and make all of you fit in my cookie jar. Now I walk up to Jesus and say, look at all these beanhead cookies behind me. I made Christians out of them. I'm to teach you to faith. But when you do, God will drop something in you. And you're going to change. If, and only if, you keep faithing. That's why I can't understand. I literally can't understand. When I sit down and start teaching on faith, why people don't start acting in faith? What's the matter with you? You want to go to hell? The only way you're going to make it is faithing. And the only thing I do as a preacher is offer you opportunity to faith. You can't figure it out. You gotta have faith. Now, can we get on doing it? And this is a pastor's message to his congregation today. I hate to take you back to kindergarten. But I think some of you need it. Don't, you can't settle down. Well, I faithed yesterday. I know I faithed yesterday more than you did today. Faith does not accrue. 10 pounds of faith yesterday is like manna. Carried over till today, it gets worms in it. Well, now I marched up to Brother Billy Fowlerhall's altar, and I believed God, and he saved me. I could say it like they say it a little better, a little practice, but I'm running out of time. Once saved, always saved. You probably go where the saver in that case goes. That was kind of swift. You got to think tight. You got saved by man and not by God, if that's your formula. Repeat after me. Today's faith brings God in. Well, I'm tired of faithing. And that, my friends, is a confession. I'm tired of it. I'm so tired of it, I want to quit. As far as I'm concerned, the last several years have earned me a berth on the gospel train. And do you mean to tell me this jackass just starting today, and I've got all these brownie points for super faithing? You know what I've done? I've faithed for years. And this jackleg drunk has decided to start over today. I'm going to claim my brownie points. Going to take him several years to catch me. Friend, he's already ahead of you. Yesterday won't work for today. The tension of true Christianity, which is why man keeps trying to change it and they keep on listening to the devil. Well, now, this legalism business, at least 70% is better than 50%. I was 50% a year ago till a preacher dumped on me and I got under conviction. I'm 72% today. I'm getting there. No, you ain't. You're going the wrong direction. It's like love. Well, I don't love you today. You should keep loving me because I loved you yesterday. Who wants to live if somebody doesn't love you? Not yesterday's love. Today, you want to write a song about that? Yesterday's love? Or yesterday's faith? Today. Well, now listen to me, Scott. Do you know how much faith I've done you? Smart out, Alec, you almost said something else. You smart, Alec. I mean, that's as close as I've ever come. You smart aleck, you. Do you realize you probably wouldn't be here today if I hadn't paid so much support into you? Now I'm going to coast straight to hell. You mean I don't get any brownie points for the past? Only if you keep the present. They're accumulative as long as you keep going. You say, you mean I lose them all if I quit today? If you stay quit, you do. The beauty of it is you break the chain and pick it up today, and you broke the chain, that past accumulation will be added on as you start over. Because the promise, the legal tender of heaven, Peter says, is faith, pride, and the fire. Go. You say, well, if you had faith, that lady over there would get out of a wheelchair. She will. Either here or over there. But as long as she keeps believing God for His promise to heal in that wheelchair, and I've seen her sing in the choir and thought she'd go out of it, the faith it takes to get here and dare to believe in spite of circumstance, I'm the Lord that healeth thee, is giving her bags of legal tender in eternity. Faith, pride, and the fire. The test. I'm tired of these shallow preachers. The only thing that will take you through is your faith today. Well, now, fan blow. I plugged you in yesterday, and it's too hot to go over there and plug you in again. Microphone, don't you dare turn it on. Make noise. Last Sunday, you were amplified. Turn me off totally. Make sound. I build up enough sound to go without the turn on. But you got to turn it on. Yesterday's current won't do it today. That's why we got to labor to enter into this rest. I don't preach an easy way. I preach an attainable way. Nobody ever said faith was easy.
It's possible. A fingernail grip on a promise of God will save you. A whole body wrapped around the law of God will take you to hell. You can climb the tree of knowledge every Sunday and fall on your asteroid. You can get a fingernail grip on a promise and live forever. That's the message of salvation.